Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, it took 3.5 quarters, but in the second half, the tide started to resemble the squad that we've grown accustomed to seeing. What took so long?
Man, I don't know why it took so long for these guys to come out and play with passion and energy that they need to play with each and every week. I mean, I know it's hard to have a target on your back. I know it's hard to get up for a Colorado State, but this definitely didn't look like a scrimmage like it did to me last week.
Do you think the smack talk that Ole Miss was putting out, the bulletin board talk, do you think it made that big of a difference?
No, man, that's just for the media. I really think that take nothing away from Vinny and take nothing away from AJ. You know, I think CJ Mosley had the most to do with it. And if, you know, we obviously aren't privy to the recording of what was said after, you know, Coach Saban said his post-game comments. But for a guy who keeps to himself and lets his play on the field lead, I've heard that, you know, he's starting to become a vocal leader. And he's a guy that, you know, should be one of the most respected guys on the team. And so if he truly stood up and said enough is enough, then I think that might have had something to do with it.
Yeah, I think without question that he is certainly viewed as a leader across the team. And it could be that, you know, he doesn't say a whole lot, but when he does, people listen. And when he does so in a demonstrative way, that it kind of resonates a little bit more than maybe a chatterbox standing up and saying something. So, you know, we've talked about C.J. Mosley being a leader, not only in his demonstration, but, you know, taking a leadership role when he needs to. And so I think him stepping up this week probably went a long ways. And hopefully it was a one-time sort of corrective action and that we're going to see this team perform like we need to see it to perform, you know, to get to where we all want to go. So this could be a game that we look back on and kind of the storylines leading up to this game could resonate, you know, as we get to the latter half of the season, that things kind of turned around or at least took an upswing with this Ole Miss performance.
Well, you know, Coach Saban always talks about teams establishing their identity, right?
Yes.
And I do think that this will be the first chapter. If they are able to do a three-peat, we will look back at this second half performance by the defense, in my opinion, as the starting point of that.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I've got some things that I definitely want to step through on defense. But let's start with the offense. Anything in particular kind of catch your eye?
Man, just on the one hand, I was happy with the ball control. I was happy in the first half that we had the 11-play drive and the 9-play drive and the 13-play drive. I mean, we ate the time of possession. We changed field position, but once again, we can't get the job done on third down. And I just question, you know, I wish I was privy to knowing what the play call was from the sideline into AJ. I'd like to know when an audible was called versus not called, you know, who was the primary receiver, all the things I'm never going to know so I can be really critical. But, you know, in that first drive, you start at the 10, you're at the 17-yard line, you got third and 11. You throw it in the flats to Kenny Bell. You throw him a 2-yard pass, and it's third and 11. And I'm sorry, they're a fast defense. They're a gang-tackling defense. There's probably a low probability he's going to get 11 yards there. And so the people listening to this show is going to be like, well, that was a check down, and he just had to get rid of the ball. And, you know, you called such good plays all the way down the field, and you moved the ball with ease, actually. I just didn't like the first, second, and third down play calls when you got to the 16-yard line.
Yeah, and I know the field gets shorter and it gets a little harder to defend, but you get, you know, you need 10, 12, 13 yards and you run a 2-yard play. That's, you know, we talked about it last week. You can throw underneath the sticks sometimes, but when you need that many yards, you can't throw it that many, you know, that far behind the sticks. And you know, like you said, we continued to drive, then we stalled out. What was frustrating for me, and I agree with you, holding the ball, moving the ball, controlling the tempo, those are all fantastic things. Those are things that we've not necessarily seen consistently throughout the season. So those are all positives in the first half. But it was frustrating, and it reminded me a little bit of the 2011 game against LSU, where all we can do is muster field goals, and all we can do is muster field goals. And, you know, and in fact, against LSU, we missed, you know, a lot of those field goals. Here we made them, and so we can certainly talk about that when we get to special teams. But it's frustrating for all of that effort to only be able to show 3 points, and all of that effort to only be able to show 6 points. And you're up by 6 points. Look, and I've said this before, you can trip and fall and someone score a touchdown. So for all of that effort, in 12 seconds, they can, you know, they can take the lead. And I find that to be frustrating. You know, when we hit 9, okay, now it's a 2-score game. When we hit 16, and that's not until the third quarter, it wasn't until we hit 16 that I could say, all right, you know, now that's a 2, you know, really it's kind of a 3-possession kind of game. Now we maybe have something cooking. But that was a long time into the game. We could have been, you know, a touchdown, 2 field goals, you know, 2 touchdowns and a field goal. We could have very easily been 17-0 at half.
Oh, sure. And, you know, going back to that series of plays real quick, on first down, we ran the ball to TJ behind Cyrus. Mm-hmm. And we were at the 16, and he had a 4-yard gain, but he fumbles the ball. And so, unfortunately, you know, he fumbles the ball. We recovered at the 17. Now it's 2nd and 11. So second down is just as critical, because on second down, we sit there and do a crossing pattern to TJ Yeldon. And so my point there is, on 2nd and 11, we try, you know, tried isolation TJ against linebacker. Okay, no gain. Now you're 3rd and 11 at the 16. Either throw the ball past the first down marker on a sideline pass, or take a shot in the end zone. That's right. Where, you know, I'm not an offensive coordinator. I'm never going to be. But in my opinion, you tried the little tricky shit on second down. It didn't work. It didn't get you in a 3rd and 5. So now you've got a good defense. You're 3rd and 11, okay? It's a chip shot field goal. Either go for the stick or throw it in the end zone. And so all three of those drives in the first half, I felt like we never took a shot in the end zone. And I just didn't understand why we didn't do that.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things there. When we say a chip shot field goal, I don't know, man. With our kicker, and look, he performed very well. But, we and certainly I was very critical of him last week. I was very nervous. I was kind of pins and needles. Every time he kicked. Because, you know, it's not that, oh, he's due to make one. He's due to miss one. And when he made the first one, I just took for granted he was going to miss the second one, you know, because he's a 50% kicker. And when he went for the third one, I was like, well, I don't know. If he makes 3 in a row, that's pretty impressive. And he did. And you know, and they were healthy sized kicks. And so, you know, the reality of it on a 3rd and 11, when you say it's a chip shot field goal, I don't know. I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if the mentality is more along the lines of, you know, holy shit, we can't kick a field goal this long. This should put it in the end zone. Or is the mentality every single yard we can get increases our probability of making this kick? And so I can't afford to throw it and incomplete for 11 yards when I can run it up the gut and get 2. And that makes it, you know, X number of percentage points more likely that he hits it.
I think it's to do with what you just said there. And maybe they're just trying to increase the, you know, the likelihood of all the yards they can get. But we even talked about that the inconsistency at field goal kicking would cause us to do different play calling. And so if the listeners will indulge me for a second, when we had 3rd and 9 at the 35-yard line on our next field goal, we call a middle pass to Kenyon Drake. And he fumbles the ball, recovered by Brian Vogler. Once again, you're at the 35-yard line. It's third and nine. You throw a middle screen right past the line of scrimmage to your tailback in the middle of the defense. So right there, right? Shouldn't you at least be trying to throw like a 10-yard route or something, because you don't want it to be a 52-yarder, right? Wouldn't you like it to be under 40 yards? So just to me, the play calling in the from the 20 to the 30-yard line, I just question about this team currently. And I just don't know who to point the finger, because we're never going to know, because we don't get to see inside, you know, we don't get to pull back the curtain. So it's fun to you know, analyze and talk about.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. When we say we're going to play call differently for the field goals, you know, that means one thing, and I think we want that to mean that we're going to be aggressive strikes for the end zone. It could be the same thing. We're play calling for field goals, and it's a play we don't like because it's the other end of the same argument. We're trying to get 3.5 yards so that we can incrementally increase his accuracy and his confidence. You know, it's a 52-yard field goal sounds a lot scarier than a 49-yard field goal, right?
Yes.
And so there's you know, we talk about, well, we're going to take big strikes to the end zone. Well, there's also, we're going to nickel and dime to make it a 48 versus a 51-yard kick because our kicker needs that stroke of ego. And so I don't know that that's true, but there's, you know, I'm not going to say it's outside of reason either.
No, I'm with you. And while we're piling on the play calling, okay, I was exasperated at what we did at the end of the half. So to go back to your point, right, we're up 6-0 at this point, and Ole Miss is not able to move the ball. It's at the end of the half, and it's 4th and 9 at their 35-yard line. We have 3 timeouts. We do not call a timeout. We let 40 seconds burn off the clock. Yep. Valuable time. They punt the ball. We start at our 19-yard line. I'm thinking, you're up 6-0. Okay. You've shown that you can protect AJ. There's no concerns here. Try to move the ball down the field, a la LSU last year. Try to go for the jugular here. Try to get a score and then settle for the field goal. And what do? We run the ball 2 of the first 3 possessions. And we get bailed out by a pass interference. Ole Miss calls a timeout because they're like, well, damn, if you're not going to try to do anything, there's 2 minutes left. We'll call a timeout.
Yeah.
Because we want to put points on the board. And so I just wanted your thoughts on this real quick, because I'm sitting here thinking, dude, we're going to sit here and screw around and punt the ball back to them with 2 minutes. They're going to sit there and slip on themselves and score a touchdown and go into the locker room up 7-6.
Sure. You know,
I was so pissed off at that point.
No. And you know, the fact that we didn't, you know, we ran off the 40 seconds and it would have been good to have those 40 seconds. They called the timeout, which actually ended up helping us because we ended up being able to do something with the ball, but we had to use, I think, 2 of those timeouts to prevent a 10-second runoff. And we used, you know, the 3rd timeout. You know, we ended up being in a situation where it was a pass to the sideline out of bounds. That's what enabled us to get the kicking team out on the field. You always want to have that last timeout so you can get the kicking team out there and sort of in some control. And when we had to rush them out there on a out of bounds play, you know, there again, that kind of feeds into, oh, now he's going to be in a rush. Now he's going to be in a rush and out of, you know, his tempo and out of his rhythm. And so the fact that we made it and we netted out, had we called the timeout and saved the 40 seconds and done everything, you know, sort of textbook and netted with a field goal, we would have gotten the same result, but it would have been more satisfying because it would not have been so haphazard, discombobulated.
Yes. And I didn't feel like we tried to go for the jugular there. I'm sitting here thinking, Bama, you get the ball to start the second half. You're up 6-0, right? If we could have scored a touchdown there and went into the locker room up 13-0 and somehow put a drive together to start the second half, well, now you've put the game away 20-0.
Sure.
I just didn't see that killer instinct. And that's I don't see the killer instinct in this team, and that frustrates me.
No, we haven't seen that yet, especially on offense. You know, we talked last week. I like after we got the turnover that we took the strike down the field for a touchdown. I like that. But we even talked in last week's show, that was sort of anomalous relative to last week. We didn't see any sort of dagger opportunity, you know, this week. And I know they were playing a too high safety, and that forced us to, you know, we were able to run against that, but not so much pass. And it was a lot of short passing. You know, McCarron, you know, 25 for 32, man, that's a pretty good day. But that's only 180 yards.
Very deceptive.
You know,
very
deceptive. He averaged 5.6 per attempt, 7.2 per completion. You know, last week he was 9.9 per attempt, which is a significant difference. And that felt like, you know, a little captain check down-ish. And these numbers, you know, 5.6 an attempt, you know, 7.2 a completion, that's – there was a little, I thought we were a little too conservative. You know, someone sent the email and said, are we a pass first team this season? And, you know, I might have said that, you know, in the preseason because, you know, we talked about all the wide receivers and the quarterback and stuff like that. And I expected us to be more of a passing team. I don't think we've been able to run, and that's not been by choice. It's just been a capability. And in the fact that we, you know, we're throwing the ball more, I think that's fine. The short passing game, again, I hate to kind of, you know, compare it to prior seasons, but it kind of reminds me of John Parker Wilson's freshman season, redshirt freshman season, where he did just a ton of just short passes, because that's what he was comfortable with. And so you reconcile, if this performance reminds me of that, then what's frustrating is that was a redshirt freshman doing that. And you could say, you know what, he's building his confidence. He's a redshirt freshman. We've got a redshirt senior out there doing the same thing. And I'm not piling on McCarron, but I'm just saying, man, when these things kind of remind me of other things that, you know, where the situation wasn't as positive then as it is now, I, you know, what is going on with the play calling?
Well, yeah, but to your point, right? Not only did you have a redshirt freshman, but you didn't have the same experience at wide receiver that you do currently.
Oh, or so, weapons.
As we spent all the time talking about in the preseason, I mean, the array of weapons that you have, there's no comparison. So I can only imagine, you know, that we're overcompensating for the three new offensive linemen, which last week was four new offensive linemen when Steen was out.
Yep.
You know, I can only imagine that's the case, but I think we got to stop the shit because I think it's totally unnecessary. And I was texting with a good friend of ours during at the end of second quarter going into halftime. And I was like, they're doing a safety run blitz every first down because they know exactly what we're doing, when we're running, when we're passing. We're not mixing it up at all. We're really telegraphing what we're going to do. And literally they just kept loading the box at the last minute and stopping the run. And I said, we got to throw the ball more on first down.
And
we're not mixing it up enough.
No, we're not mixing it up. And, you know, and what's funny is, and, you know, we sit with Bama Joe and I leaned down at one point to Joe and I said, Joe, we need to take the top off with Amari right here. And I swear that's when we went down the field with Amari. And I was sitting there thinking, you know what, if I'm calling this stuff from up here, that's scary.
Well, no, it is. And I'll give you one little sequence. You know, so coming as I was talking at halftime with this friend, I said, you know, we're up 9-0. I wish it was more. I turned to you and even said, I wish we'd come no huddle to start the second half.
Yep.
Just something different. Just change the makeup. Just change the rhythm. Change what we're doing. And so we didn't do that. But I do want to talk about, you know, what we did do coming out of the second half, because once again, you know, it just speaks to play calling, and maybe this podcast is just going to be about play calling, but I still find it interesting. Sure. Is we come out of second half, they have an offsides. They give us the opportunity to have a 1st and 5 at the 30-yard line. And to your point, we throw out in the flat to DeAndre White for 2 yards, 2-yard completion. Now, the very next play, TJ has his great spin move, 68-yard run, you know, to use the baseball terminology, he picks up the guy in the lineup before him, right? Mm-hmm. And so everybody's all ecstatic because now we're up 16-0 and everybody forgets about that. But the play before, I turned to you and I said, right there would have been a great opportunity because we've been doing so much dinking and dunking crap to have done a pump fake to DeAndre because the corner and the safety just they bit hard on him, which is why he only gained 2 yards. And I was like, what about a pump fake right there? He would have taken off on a go route. You would have laid it up and I could have thrown that touchdown.
Yeah.
And so I don't get that. I don't get why we're not doing some of that. Why aren't we setting up and then doing something different?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, at one point you said, you know, you said we're not going to call this, but we need to call a flea flicker. Or we need to, you know, something where there's a double move or something where there's, you know, I don't want to say a trick play, but a hint of deception, right? You know, yes. You think I'm going to run a little curl, but I'm going to hitch on you and I'm going down the sideline. And, you know, now they were playing, say, you know, 2-man safety deep. And so, you know, you can bite on a lot of that short stuff because, you know, you've got the help over the top. And so, you know, you could do a double move and then run yourself right into coverage. So that's something to keep in mind, too. I want to counterbalance that. Our coaches aren't, you know, complete morons. And I'm not suggesting that they're morons at all. But, you know, that's something to think about. You know, that's, you know, so, you know, and I'm not saying that we're morons because I think there's opportunities that, you know, for both parties to be right. But we seem to play really, really close to the vest, which, you know, frankly, has not been our personality. You know, we'll run the ball, but we'll be aggressive with the ball down the field too. And I find that we just didn't demonstrate any aggression with the ball. I would say zero. I mean,
zero. You know, it goes back to your play on the, you know, Colorado State, right, where we took the shot and you were so surprised by it. You know, this isn't rocket science, okay? It was like I was seeing somebody break down Oregon the other day, and on one particular route, the guy was running a hook pattern. And instead of running a hook, he hinted for the hook and then he did a go. We don't do any of that kind of stuff. There's no misdirection in our route running at all. And I'm sitting there thinking, gosh, you got veteran receivers who know multiple positions and you have a fifth-year senior quarterback. If you're going to do it, isn't this the time to do it?
Yeah, I would think. I would definitely think. Do you think Amari Cooper, you know, had that monster day in the second scrimmage, and it seems that he has not been the same since. Do you think that is having that much of a rub-off effect on our passing game?
Man, I was excited that Amari Cooper was held out for Colorado State for precautionary reasons because I was excited that we would have to rely and develop these other receivers. And so I said, hey, think about this, man. This is going to be awesome. When Amari comes back healthy, we're just going to be that more, you know, versatile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he seems to be developing some really good chemistry with Christian Jones.
Yes.
But I don't know if Amari is still banged up and we just don't know it because, man, you and I watched some of his routes he was running. And our colleague Eric even pointed out, it just almost looked like, I'm sorry, his effort was not there. Maybe he's injured and we don't know it. Maybe his role was be a decoy. We don't know it. He did not look like the same Amari Cooper in that game to me at all.
No, he didn't. And, you know, one thing that, you know, as you're talking about that, one thing that to keep in mind, you know, it's easy to sort of blank, you know, kind of gloss over everything last year and say, oh, he was a stud all of last season. That's not true. He did not come into his significant playing time last year until DeAndre got hurt. And then, you know, he was a true freshman coming on and he did emerge. And then right about that time, he was really, really demonstrating flashes. He suffered an injury and there were, I think he did sit out a game or he sat out parts of games and we did use him as a decoy. So his season last year was not all superstar performance. He had some up and down. So the fact that we're kind of pointing this out, you know, this season, maybe he's starting not altogether dissimilar from last year, you know, limited. He's just a known commodity and he's drawing, you know, maybe some coverages more this year at the beginning. But I guess my net point is when he comes on, and I think that he will, I think he is going to take the top off of defenses. We just need him to get healthy. And so if he sits out this next week against Georgia State, that's not going to bug me in the slightest. And in fact, like you said, I might actually enjoy that because he could probably use the rest.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you.
Over that injury.
And I don't think he is yet. My only explanation is that he's just not over it yet. I do want to take a second and give some Kevin Norwood love.
Yeah.
One of our friends commented that he felt like we were just always talking about the headliners, and I had to correct him. I couldn't reference the exact podcast, but for those that's been listening to us for a few years, we give Kevin Norwood the love. We talk about the fact that he is just Mr. Automatic on third down. We talked about in the Texas A&M game when he made that big touchdown catch, why we don't allow him to be more involved, it seems, in play calls that doesn't make him a possession receiver. Well, when he had his first third down catch in this game, you and I turned to each other and I said, you know, if I was defenses, yep, I would double cover his ass on third down because that's where the ball's going. And yeah, so once yeah, again, him being back in the lineup made a big difference for AJ.
Yeah, it really did. And I went, you know, he had 5 catches for 40. And his numbers are always kind of misleading because they'll look pedestrian, but when you look a little deeper at them, you know, they're significant. And, you know, like last year against that, I don't know who's saying we don't talk about Kevin Norwood because, you know, we raved about him after the LSU game last year and what he did 3 straight plays before Yeldon did what he did. He caught first down catches along the sideline, moving the chains and appropriately stopping the clock. You know, I went and looked up his 5 catches. Now, he had 2 first downs amongst his 5, but on 3rd and 11, we complete a pass to him for 10 yards. And so right at, you know, he's just a shade away from getting the first down. And we throw to him 2 times on first down, and one time he gains 8 and one time he gains 7. So we matriculate down to a second down, and both times in that series we complete first down. So he helps us move the chains 4 out of his 5 catches, and he got a 2 target. He was targeted 2 additional times, incomplete, but I think one was a pass interference. So, you know, Kevin Norwood's just one of those dudes. You know, I don't know. Maybe I should know this. I don't know if he's ever had a 100-yard day, but he has had superstar performances, superstar catches, just maybe not all in one day.
Absolutely. I just wanted to take a minute and talk about him because he definitely stepped up as usual. And, you know, he's a quiet guy. He goes about doing his job, but he does it well.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to, I'm going to let you have the floor here, man. I want you to do a little Kenyon Drake love.
Oh man, I was very pleased with Kenyon's performance. You know, 99 yards, he had a 50-yard touchdown. He seemed to just run. Now he is fast. I've been trying to think when have we last seen a running back as fast as Kenyon Drake? And I know I've in some ways compared him to Sean Alexander in the way that he runs, but in terms of his speed, he reminds me of Sean Bohannon, where he just has the top end speed. Now I think Bohannon was kind of point him in one direction and he's just going to, you know, he didn't have a lot of shake to him. I think Kenyon's got a little more wiggle to him, but man, he's got some top end speed. And when he got loose on that touchdown, there was no question that he was going to score. I was very pleased with his performance.
Well, you know, I'm sure people that went back and watched the game saw this, but on that touchdown run, what I found more interesting is he was trying to be patient and read his blockers, mm-hmm, and Cyrus collapsed and Brian Vogler collapsed and Jostin Fowler collapsed. Well, Jostin Fowler had nobody to block, mm-hmm, and he was literally sitting in the backfield in his way, and he literally kind of had to push him to the side because he saw the hole on the sideline.
Yep.
And he saw there was nobody there, and he just said, get out of my way. I got to go. And
gotta
he
go.
Just ran right past his blocker.
Yep.
And so what I find more interesting about the Drake story, because we've talked a lot about him,
yep,
is that he is seizing his opportunity. No one nipping at his heels is a Derrick Henry type of player, not to take anything away from the other freshmen, but that the guy who broke the record for the most rushing yards in all of high school football ever is sitting on the bench. And so we didn't see Jostin Fowler in this primary backup role. Okay. This is the first time it's been Drake, because, you know, last week TJ Yeldon was suspended for the first quarter. And so we can't compare that, because it had to be the Fowler and Drake show.
Yep.
But, you know, in the first quarter, but this is the first time in his career that he has stepped up and he has assumed that role of getting the 10 to 12 carries, backing up the primary guy. And he kind of seized his moment.
I think he did. And, you know, Tommy, we could go back as far as A-Day, our post A-Day show, and certainly our preseason shows, and maybe even some early season shows, where we have laid it out pretty clearly that, you know, and maybe me more so than you, I'm really high on Kenyon Drake. But we've laid it out, you know, look, he's been in the doghouse some. He's got a lot of talent. He really needs to step it up. And we just signed four, not one or two, but good gosh, four four-star or higher rated running backs in one freshman class. That's the kind of situation where if Kenyon, anyone in this situation, if they're going to screw around and get in the doghouse again, they will be paved over. They literally will be a footnote in the history of the program.
Yes.
And they will be invited to transfer come the end of the season. And so Drake really is faced and still, right? Because it's a day-to-day.
But I think he's starting to get thing. That.
But if he gets it, and we've emphasized it, and maybe this is the last time we have to emphasize it, because now he's had some success. And if he can say, you know what, if I play by the rules, I can have the success. And I can be the guy. I can be the guy behind Yeldon. And we've talked about in our offense where we run, you know, we essentially have two starters at tailback. And so you don't have to be number one if you can be number two, because they're essentially the same thing. And if he can be that guy, the future is his. And you know, he's gotta play ball the way Saban wants him to play ball. You know, he doesn't have to be the best at blitz pickup, but he has to show some want to. He doesn't have to be the best at pass protection, but he has to have some want to and some willingness and some effort. And if he'll just do that, then he will be given the opportunity to tote the ball. And, you know, again, you run off a 50-yarder and then you show a little bit of demonstration, a little bit of effort and some pass block, it's hard to keep you off the field.
Oh, absolutely. I just find the backstory of that just so interesting, just because of, you know, his story is unlike anybody else's team in college football with the, you know, with the talent that he has behind him.
Yep.
Hey, why do you think we didn't see a little bit more Fowler? I was kind of surprised with only two carries on the day.
Yeah, I really was too. I thought that we would see more of him, you know, kind of the big bruising back. At one point we ran him. It was late third, early fourth quarter. And, you know, and he doesn't get a huge run, but he gets 6, 7, 8, you know, yards in it. And it's sort of a big battering ram run kind of up the middle. And I just turn, you know, we just, you know, mentioned during the game, why don't we do more of that? Because I think that we could have beat them up more. We seem to want to outrun them to the edges, which that's fine because we had some success doing that. But I think we could have beat them up too. I think we could have had success.
Could have wore them down.
Yes. I think we could have had success with both styles. And that's a neat dynamic to kind of mix up. You know, we're going to punch in the mouth, and then we're just going to run right past you. And really, you can't do anything about either. I kind of enjoy when we set them up and knock them down that way. But, you know, very few carries. I would have expected more. Or get them in the passing game. We seem to, you know, even, you know what? And for all our short passing, we didn't throw much to the H-back at all. You know, Vogler, you know, got a couple of opportunities, you know, fumbled one. It came right back up.
Had an interception on the other one.
You know, one kind of bounced off his chest and led to an interception. We had zero passes to O.J. Howard. And that's a guy we've talked about. You know, we're intentionally trying to grow him up, intentionally try to get him the ball. And so I don't know what happens. I don't know what plays were called, who were the primary. You know, maybe he was cut. We didn't work.
But how do you attempt 32 passes and none go to O.J. Howard, right?
You got me on that one.
And see, to your point about Fowler real quick, we talked in the preseason, which made a lot of sense to me, of how nice would it be to see a Derrick Henry or Fowler, whoever gets that job, right, coming in the fourth quarter and just wearing your ass out. And so your comment about Fowler, I had to go back and look. His two carries, okay, they came on the last three possessions.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until halfway through the fourth quarter that we even see him. And to your point, I just felt like earlier in the game, we had the opportunity to beat up on them some on those long drives where we've had these 11 and 13 play drives. Mm-hmm. And I just was surprised we didn't do it more.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Not only late in the game to beat them up, but, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 plays into a long drive, you can start to beat up on a defense. And, you know, and those, you know, that 12th and 13th play can really have a multiplier effect, because not only is it that many plays, but now we're getting punched in the nose with a 240-pound running back. Where'd the heck he come from?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
what else on offense did you see?
You know, I think we've covered it pretty well. I just, you know, just the overall play calling. I guess we haven't covered it well. We got to talk a second about Chad Lindsey.
Yeah.
You know, we should have talked about this probably at the beginning. You know, just the, we were led to believe, as was everybody else, that Ryan was kind of the assumed guy, you know, coming out of fall camp. And, you know, I went back and listened to each player interview that is put up on AL.com. Mm-hmm. And let me just say that when you listen to an AJ McCarron interview, you might as well just plug in the team name. No offense, but these guys that have been interviewing for a while, I guess they just get numb to it. And they've been trained to give the same pat answer. So if I was the media, I wouldn't even interview AJ. It's a waste of time. But when you interview these guys who have never got to talk to the media, that's the good stuff.
Yep.
They have not been coached yet. And so Chad let it slip. Hey, in practice, I got the same reps that Ryan did last week.
Yep.
And so then it had to get asked in the press conference. And then Saban had to go on and basically say, look, there was a pretty even competition with these guys all along. And so I don't know about you, but that's the first I heard of it. Made me feel a lot better that he was viewed that way by the team. Did a good job of not letting anybody else know. And so no surprise when he came out there in the second quarter, most teams losing their starting center against an SEC opponent, right? Floodgates are about to open up. We know this firsthand from Alabama teams in the past.
Oh, we most certainly
did. And let me just say, we didn't skip a beat.
No, we did not.
It wasn't like Antoine Caldwell coming out of the game, was it?
No. It was a very good performance. I don't think that he is as athletically gifted as Ryan Kelly, but he's bigger. And, you know, some of the knock on Kelly is that he's not as big as he really needs to be against some of these SEC nose guards, and that he has been pushed around a little bit. And when he doesn't get the chip, and, you know, and coach has been clear to say, you know, sometimes it's not the primary blocker's fault. It's the fault of the guy who's not chipping. And
right.
And he's not mentioned players by name, but every time I hear that, I think, well, I know who you're talking about. You know, it's the center and one of the guards. And so I wonder if Chad Lindsey isn't in an opportune situation to be that bigger body. Cause you know, we don't need somebody out there necessarily that's an athlete getting to the next level. We need somebody that can shut down a nose guard and help to free.
He looks to me like a Will Vallejos.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. Let's face it. Will Vallejos didn't make it to the next level. He did more than I ever did, right? He wasn't your prototypical center, but he seemed to be pretty damn effective the whole time he was here.
Yeah, and there's next level NFL, but there's next level, you know, getting out to the linebacker sometimes, and you know, Barrett was able to do that, and we've had centers that, you know, Antoine Caldwell is a good example. We've had centers that could get out there and pull and do different things, but that takes a spectacular athletic center. You're not going to get that out of a lot of centers. So yeah, I would gladly take William Vallejos type performance, because hell, he was, you know, a national champion, multi-time national champion at center. So I will gladly take that kind of performance there. And it seems that Chad Lindsey is, you know, he's going to get his first start of his career on Saturday, and, you know, very, very pleased with him, and look forward to, you know, to what he's going to be able to do for us. I read, you know, kind of a post-game interview with Steen, and Steen, you know, and, you know, say what we want to about Steen, he's probably one of our better linemen this season and has really played a lot of snaps, a lot of ball for us over the years. And, you know, he said that Lindsey was maybe wide-eyed on the first play, but by the second play, it was just business as usual. And I think that's phenomenal for a guy seeing his first action. I mean, he's played before, don't get me wrong, but his first action when the game's on the line, and he's going to be, you know, he's going to be in there indefinitely, right? Because I've heard anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks that Ryan Kelly's out. So, you know, Chad Lindsey is, you know, it's an exciting opportunity for him right now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, we were not going to get out of offense without discussing Chad.
No, absolutely. Anything else you got on offense?
You know, I like Yeldon and his 121 and his touchdown. He had a 68-yard touchdown run. And what was cool to me, and again, you know, it'd be fun to know what the play calls coming in the sidelines are and when we're making adjustments. It appeared to me that AJ called that audible at the line. Because, you know, he was motioning and turning around and doing, you know, a poor man's Peyton Manning imitation in terms of, you know, changing the play. And, you know, and we bust that one for a touchdown. That was a significant run. I think it's those types of runs that, you know, a 68-yard run versus a 5-yard run. Sometimes what the offensive line does is really no different. Because once the running back gets past, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards down to scrimmage, you know, past the line of scrimmage, there's not a lot an offensive lineman's going to do. But it really builds their confidence, you know, that we set up some blocks and ran for a long touchdown. And I think that's something that can really bode well for the offensive line. And I just want to underscore, you know, we have our starting five offensive linemen. You know, Steen has missed a game, and now Ryan Kelly is out. And he's going to miss some time. So this time next week, we will be able to say that we have started 7 offensive linemen. I don't know when the last time was we've done that.
No, and for all of the accolades that our prior offensive, well, last year, right, we got to start the same 5 all season. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad you brought that up, right, because the average fan, you know, all the media is talking about the headline, right, is the offensive line gelling, blah, blah, blah. And we were even critical here about, you know, the third down conversions, which might have more to do with play calling. But to your point, how many SEC teams out there can say they've already started that many combinations at this point in the season? And so the biggest thing about Ryan going down, right, is most fans in the stands didn't even know it. And they didn't skip a beat.
Right, right. Yeah, because he went out kind of quietly,
yes.
You know, walked back to the locker room kind of nonchalant. You know, that was done kind of quietly. We just kind of caught it on the binoculars and, you know, kind of look for that kind of thing, you know, sometimes. And, yeah, you know, I would say a lot of people maybe didn't notice. But, you know, I'm pleased with Chad, happy with his performance, and happy to look for him this coming week. Who you got mini game ball on offense?
Man, mini game ball, probably for the reason that we mentioned, is going to have to be Lindsey.
Okay.
I mean, he's the epitome of a mini game ball, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he comes in, coach says, hey, be ready. He goes, takes some snaps. He comes into the game. We're able to still have the game plan in place. He's rehearsed it in practice. As Saban says, the toughest thing is to be able to mentally prepare yourself each week, not ever knowing when you're going to go in the game.
Yep.
And from what we've heard, the guy's an intelligent kid, and that must be true.
Yep.
And it could have been a totally different game had he not, you know, done what he did.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It could have it could definitely be, a bad situation. And we've lost, you know, a center, and really this season kind of has tanked, you know, when we've lost a center before. And so that's certainly something that we did not want to replicate. You know, I had 2 guys picked out for my mini game ball, And I knew that you would pick one, so I'm going to pick the other, Kevin Norwood. And again, for reasons that we've already put out there, you know, 5 receptions, 40 yards. But integral, he played an integral role in 4 first downs, helping us move the chains. You know, can't get enough of Kevin Norwood.
Absolutely. Well, hey, man, flip the field to defense. Give me your initial thoughts.
Yeah, as we flip the field to defense, I just want to remind everyone to check us out on secbias.com. That's where we're hanging out and talking football on the chat rooms there. So check out secbias.com, our newest sponsor, and we appreciate their support. I'm going to tell you what stood out to me on defense and amongst a number of things, because, you know, we could spend some time on defense, but I'm going to tell you what jumped out to me on defense, because it was the very first thing I was looking for when we put our defense on the field. And that's freshman Eddie Jackson starting opposite Deion Ballou. Very, very pleased with his performance. And, you know, if anyone's putting a drinking game around our show, it's probably something around when we pick out a freshman that we really like and we say this guy's going to be a star. But if that's the case, you know, bottoms up, because Eddie Jackson's going to be a star.
He is. And I think we spent some time talking about him in last week's show. But, you know, we were looking for a couple things, right? Number one, we warned, you know, for me, my first take was, okay, how is Ballou even going to come out there? Because my first take was, as y'all can say, he's been practicing and all that, but at the end of the day, media watches for 5 minutes. Yep. How's Ballou going to look?
Yep.
We've seen turf toes that last a while, yep. i.e. John Fulton. So I was a little skeptical 2 weeks later that he'd be out there. So then when I saw him out there and I saw him moving around, I said, oh, that bodes well, because let's face it, he's by far our best corner.
Yep.
Then my eyes on the second or third play went over there to pick up, okay, what cornerback's out there with him. And when I saw Eddie Jackson, you know, he reminds me in just measurables and meets the eye test of a Dre Kirkpatrick.
I think he's thicker than Dre.
He might be a thicker Dre, but he's got the long arms. He's rangy. He's got some size to him. And I told you during the game, and I told the guy I texted during the game, Nick Saban's defense is predicated on two corners on an island playing press man in your face the whole game. Don't take a play off. You're going to line up 2 yards off the wide receiver each and every freaking play.
Yep.
And so when we had auditions in the scrimmage last week, every corner that came out there, 8 yards off the ball, 10 yards off the ball, whatever. Why? Because they were going to get beat.
Yep.
And so, A, I was surprised that Ole Miss didn't really test the freshman corner. And B, I was impressed that one time he had a miscommunication and gave up a slant pattern. Okay. But for the most part, he kept coming back in your face at the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
And he can be physical. And that's what Nick Saban needs. So when you brought in Ballou back and you had this other guy, just like you said about Drake, Eddie Jackson has just won the starting corner for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, and he had a pick, which that's going to be a headline. You know, everyone's woo-wee interception in his, you know, his first start, or, you know, I guess his second start. But, you know, and that's a great play. I'm not knocking it. He jumped up and he high pointed the ball. There's some athleticism there. He had a pass breakup on another situation. He blew up a screen. He had a couple tackles. He had a tackle that probably saved a touchdown at one point. But what really impressed me, and this is kind of what you got to look for a center or for a cornerback, is, you know, the short-term memory.
Yes.
You're going to make a play, and look, you get put on an island, you're going to get burned. It's going to happen. And he gave up a pass play a couple times. It was the slant. You know, they run, you know, you run a slant because it's the easiest route to get open on, right? Because even if the cornerback, even if the defender's trailing and in good position, you know, you could still throw it out in front of the receiver's body. And sometimes it can be, you know, we should run more of it, I guess, is what I'm trying to build up to.
Yes.
But, you know, my point here with Eddie Jackson, you know, freshman Eddie Jackson, he got beat a couple of times, but it did not phase his play. There was no woe is me. It was just get back up, play the next down, and, you know, two snaps later make a big play.
It was. And, you know, when he got ejected on the bogus call that I can't stand of, you know, of college football now, that impressed me more than the interception, because we have to have corners that are physical. So the two plays that jumped out at me is he knocked your block off on that play. And to your point, you pointed out the play where he was in space on an island. He was the only guy to beat. He was at the line of scrimmage, and he made a form tackle in space in the open field. There was no doubt. You weren't getting run over. He tackled the guy.
Yeah.
And that's what caught your attention.
Yeah.
Because you said, look, right there, only man. He was the only guy within 15 yards of the guy. The guy would have at least had 30 yards.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and I'm glad, you know, in terms of distractions and noise and clutter and all the crap that you know, that Saban talks about that's true and is real, you know, you almost get thrown out of a game. Now, he didn't lead with his head. He led with his shoulder and replay, you know, and we can, you know, that's a whole nother topic. But the point is there was the opportunity for him to get a little bit down and to let that impact his play. And he didn't. He just came right back out there and continued to play at a high level. And if you kind of dice and, you know, what's funny. And so here's how nut job I am about this sometimes. When he was going to get kicked out, my first thought was, damn, he needs these next 12 reps. That's where my head went. It's like, I wasn't worried. We'll bring in someone and
they'll be serviceable.
We'll be okay for this game. But I was thinking, man, he needs these next 12 reps. And then there's the opportunity that he could have missed, you know, part of the next week. I was like, man, he needs this action. He needs this live action. And so that's where my head went on it. But if you kind of peel back and you kind of lay out in front of you, kind of turn over all the cards and you look at, well, what were the experiences of Eddie Jackson's day? He almost gets thrown out of the game, you know, for essentially what was a bad call, but he rebounded from that. He had a pick. He had a pass breakup.
Almost had a second tackles, pick.
Almost had another pick. Got burned, but came back and continued to play. And you think of all of these things that he experienced, he grew up a lot. That's a lot of growth opportunities.
Some guys don't do that in a season, David.
No.
He just went through in one game.
That's my point. You know, it's the kind of thing, if he wanted to lay his pillow, you know, lay his head down on his pillow and think, well, what's the one thing I remember about this game? He's up all night because there's like 12. Right?
No, I'm
and
with
so
you.
So those are experiences that he gets to kind of marinate in and say, I can do this. I can do this. And I think he grows up from this performance. He's going to be a fun one to watch. I'm just, you know, I get this way about players sometimes, I guess. He's going to be a fun one to watch as the season unfolds.
When we talk about the identity, okay, I want to underscore, okay, and I wish I could mark the minute on the show right now. We're going to go back to this moment as the turning point in the season for Alabama football, okay? And so right now, okay, we talked last week about Nick Saban's defense and that if you can expose the corner in 101s, you open up the whole field.
Yep.
That's what Texas A&M did. Deion Ballou came out of the game hurt. We had two backups in the game, and they were beat consistently down the field man-to-man. If Eddie Jackson can continue what he did in this game, he is the one cog in that secondary that will cause this team to be able to win out.
Yes.
I'm serious. And so when Deion Ballou got interviewed in the player interview, because he doesn't talk much, and so he's going to be honest, he said flat out, he was the cog. He was the missing piece of the puzzle. That was his words. I agree with Deion Ballou 100%.
Well, we talked about we have to, and I'm going to use this as a segue. We have to find the corner that's going to play opposite Ballou. And so we thought,
finally found it.
Can it be Fulton? And we got a little suspect on that and not sure and hopeful. And, you know, it turns out, okay, maybe not. But it looks like freshman Eddie Jackson's is the dude. And I think that I'm ecstatic about that. In my next breath, is it too early to put out a missing persons report on Geno Smith?
It is too early. It is too early. And so what should be so comforting for you is that Eddie Jackson did what he did
And let's go ahead and segue into how valuable Jarek Williams has been.
Yeah, I want to be, you know, look, I have, you know, a crush on Geno Smith as well, you know, in kind of the same way, the way that he came on last year. But I don't in any way want to minimize the performance that that Jarek is putting out there. You know, Saban was not messing around when he said he's got to earn his spot back. And Jarek took that as Jarek maybe took that more literal than anyone and said, well, OK, that means he's got to beat me out. And I have something to say about that.
Well, and for the listeners, do not forget, before Jarek Williams went down to a season ending injury last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy slated to be star. He had earned it in the summer practice.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about Geno, you know what's so freaking exciting now is that Landon Collins is coming on like he is. Jarek Williams is coming on like he is. And then if you can play in this Eddie Jackson, now Geno can come in with no pressure and he can work himself in the season and he can be one of those corners next year. Yep. This is a great situation. I am so happy that it has happened the way it has, that it hasn't had to be put on Geno's shoulders, that now he can step in, dude. There's no pressure.
Yeah, he's got to get his head on, and he has to come on and, I think he's a good kid. I don't know that off the field, but I think he needs to get his act together. And I don't mean that as a negative. I think he needs to kind of keep it together. And not get down by this situation and really use it for what it is, which is a motivational opportunity. And look, I think he hopefully knows better than anyone because he sat on the bench a lot of most of the season last year. He should know more than anyone that, hey, my opportunity, there is still plenty of opportunity in the balance of this season. And I'm not rooting for an injury, nor am I suggesting that that's necessarily what's going to happen. I just think that we're going to rotate a lot of guys in and before the season's out, you know.
And that's not a bad problem to have, right?
That's a good
problem to have.
Hey, you know, I was weeping and gnashing of teeth last week about the cornerback position and, I don't want to carry it too far the opposite way this week, but getting Ballou back and getting, you know, freshman Eddie Jackson out there playing like that makes me feel a lot better. Jarek keeps performing. Let's talk about another safety. Haha seemed to be playing with some of that intensity and passion that we were questioning his performance on last week.
That's true. And specifically the fourth down play. You know, Saban even took the time to telegraph that, you know, we had a linebacker, C.J. Mosley, that didn't shift outside like he wanted to. They were trying to contain the edges. Haha was supposed to be in the middle of the field. Haha reads the play at the snap. He covers 20 yards in no time flat, and he comes up and makes the hit at the line of scrimmage on the running back. And it's the best tackle I've seen him make in his career, actually. I mean, it was a jaw-stopping, you know, literally he took the guy's feet out from under him and flipped him upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a very physical play. And he had to cover a lot of ground to make that play. And I think that was a turning moment for Haha.
Yeah, absolutely. He had eight tackles, which led the team. And he just appeared to be inspired. I don't know what necessarily, you know, kind of flipped the switch for him, but he's a guy that we talked about in the preseason and we don't want to make sure he doesn't get Marcell Dareus disease. And maybe there was an opportunity to wonder where, he played some inspired ball on Saturday. And if that's a reflection of how he's going to play out, then this defense is really going to take on, you know, again, identity, personality. This defense is really going to come together this next two thirds of the season.
It is, and the other thing I'll say about Haha real quick is, you know, the pundits will have him as the top safety coming out in the draft next year,
mm-hmm.
and you and I fairly said he's not there yet, right? Well, for this one game, whatever was the turning point for him, he played like the top safety in college football for this day. And I hope he can continue doing so.
Oh yeah. He played like the billing
Yes.
You know, maybe for the first time.
He lived up to his billing. Yeah, for the first time this season. And I also want to touch on the Vinny Haha combination, because Coach Saban said something interesting in his coach's show about how, you know, in the second half, they made an adjustment on their blitzes because they weren't getting to Bo Wallace enough, because with the no huddle, you can kind of see where the defense is going to be blitzing from. And so they were blitzing at the line of scrimmage in the first half, and he could see it. Bo Wallace is experienced, and he could shift the protection. Well, in the second half, what they did, which I thought was great, is they started sending Vinny on a delayed blitz from 10 yards off the ball. Mm-hmm. And him and Jarek Williams on a couple of third down plays, on a second and a third down play back-to-back, did the same exact blitz on the same side. I pointed out to you, look, they just ran the same call.
Yep.
But literally, Haha was back in the back like we like, and they sent Vinny to jump up in the air like he does. Mm-hmm. And I love the adjustment. I love that they were mixing and disguising their blitzes more in the second half, and it seemed to give Ole Miss a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it really did. We seemed to, you know, we seemed to mix it up and do a couple of different things. You know, we saw, and I watched the defensive back. You know, and I've been doing that, you know, a lot. But one of the things that I noticed that we're doing, and it's very interesting because, you know, I kind of talked about this leading up to the Johnny Manziel game. We ran a lot of formation. I saw some last week, and I observed it some more today, where we're playing essentially, you know, two defensive tackles. And so we got an Ashawn in there with an Ivory, and then we've got a defensive end in Xavier Dixon, and a linebacker in Hubbard coming up, and they're playing their respective defensive ends. Then we've got two linebackers behind them, and it's typically Mosley and DePriest, and we've got a nickel on top of that. And I thought, man, that's a pretty diverse lineup that we have there. I like what we're doing there. And I think having the two big bodies, the two defensive tackles, I think that allowed us to stop the run while playing too high safety. And so we get protection over the top, but still able to stop the run. And, you know, Saban commented that was a big difference in our defensive performance. Then we watched that formation evolve, where we still have the two defensive tackles. We still have a true defensive end, and then Hubbard, you know, in this Jack linebacker position, playing kind of man in the other defensive end. He can split off into coverage, and we did see him do that some. But we'll take DePriest out, and we'll bring in a dime, but we'll walk Landon Collins up as a safety into that linebacker position. And from there, he can blitz. He can effectively play linebacker, or he can step back into coverage. And I like that. Those are some interesting looks that we're showing on defense. I really like what we're doing there.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the too high safety, because I listened to the interview from Bo Wallace, and he talked about how, you know, them building up momentum in their speed game is predicated on success on first down.
Yep.
And he talked about how, I mean, you and I talked about how, you know, Ole Miss's bread and butter, right, is to be able to run the ball on the edges. Mm-hmm. And their ability, I mean, you know, they were coming into this game averaging 500 yards of offense. But let's face it, Jeff Scott came to this game averaging almost 10 yards a carry.
Yep.
He finished the day 8 carries for 28 yards, 3.5 yards. And, yep. and the offensive coordinator for Ole Miss talked about how the defensive ends in this game plan was flowing everything to the middle. They were protecting the outside edge, and they were not letting Jeff Scott get to the edge. And so to your point, it all feeds in nicely, right? If we bring in Ashawn Robinson, who we got to give some love to, because damn true freshman, you're playing ball.
Yep.
If we can bring him into the game with an Ivory, and we have the faith that if we turn you inside, we can stop the run, right? Well, then we really got you screwed, because we got two safeties over the top to help out our freshman, Eddie Jackson.
Yep.
So once again, the offensive coordinator did his interview, and he was open and candid. He said, we did a lot of things wrong. He said, but they just took away our outside run. And that's one of our bread and butter plays.
Yep. And in fact, you know, one of the successful outside runs that they did have, you know, Hubbard was in position, but he stepped, he did not really maintain his edge, and he stepped right into the trap block. You know, the tackle, you know, went the other way, and he stepped up and started to pursue down the line, and he got jacked by the trap block, which opened up a running lane. And, you know, I kind of got frustrated, you know, Hubbard, there's a reason that's why so wide open, you know, they're coming to trap you, and they got to run there, against us. You know, we had some good backside coverage, and so it didn't go for a big gain, but when we contained, we shut them down. And so, hey, look, if he's going to fall into the trap once, that's okay. He's not going to do it every time, but that's something on tape that he can certainly learn from. You know, we talked about their running performance. They averaged 1.8 yards, you know, on the day. So that's very low. As a team, they got 46 yards, and this cannot be understated. You know, we shut them out. I mean, so it's obvious that they scored zero, but there's another way of saying it out loud, and it really resonating. We held them 38 points below their season scoring average.
Much better way to say it.
That's pretty darn impressive, right?
Sure.
So.
No, that's a much better way to say it.
What else on defense stood out to you?
You know, we talked about A'Shaun a little bit. Just his play is impressive. Denzel Duvall, you know, had that big strip of Bo Wallace late in the game, which was nice to see, because we've talked a lot about him. There was just a lot of plays. I mean, Deion Ballou, as the media was covering, you know, he had, I think, one solo and one assist, and he had a ho-hum game. But guess what? He came back and did what we need him to do, and he just took away one side of the field.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, that cannot.
Oh, gosh, how nice is that? That can't be understated.
No. They only attempted pass to his twice, and neither are close.
Oh my goodness. So it I was really, really way more pleased, as we just talked earlier, with the defense than the offense. It was, you know, I can't wait till we get this game, that we put it all together, because we haven't done it yet, but we will.
We were as close as we've been in this game. And the defense, I think, really stood up. And I kind of have to laugh at our fans a little bit on this, but we closed them down on a number of fourth down attempts, and you know, they were going for it because they were trying to score the touchdown. That really helped us, you know, preserve the shutout, because they could have gone for a field goal, but there were a couple opportunities there when they went to field goals that really would not have helped them. It would have gotten rid of the goose egg, but it wouldn't have helped. It was one point is a 16-point game. You score the field goal, it's still a 13-point game, you still need two touchdowns, but at a 6-point game or 16-point game, you score two touchdowns with the 2-point conversions, and you can get to 16 on two possessions. And so scoring the field goal there really would not have, you know, from a number of possessions left in the game standpoint, the field goal there's no value to it.
Oh, sure. And that's what made it fun when, you know, to your point that it was 16 points. Because then it made the defense have to stop a high potent offense in that situation. I love the fact that it forced so many of those fourth down conversions.
Yeah.
Because that's just experience that they need for later in the season when it really matters.
Yep. And you know what's funny to me is we got a freebie opportunity to close them down on fourth down, because we closed them down on fourth down. This was in the fourth quarter. You know, play over, fourth down, our ball, but there was the latest flag I've ever seen in that type of situation for a flag that was a pre-snap flag.
Yes.
So infer what you want from that. But a pre-snap flag comes out after the play is over, and so it's against Ole Miss, and the crowd goes crazy, and there's an additional roar of applause and celebration when that flag's against them. And so what we're really celebrating there is that they get to run a fourth down play again.
Right.
And so I got a kick out of that. you know, hey guys, they've already turned the ball over. Now they get to run a free play. Why are we cheering that?
But, absolutely.
And so, you know, and it was from 5 yards back. And so I get a kick out of stuff like that. But the fact that we held them and then we did indeed get the ball back, kind of at the end of the day, I thought was fantastic. And I always like to, you know, we kind of work this in because he's a superstar. And, you know, we don't like to kind of go to the superstar, but I don't think we can talk about defense and not talk about CJ Mosley, his seven sure. tackles, his safety, and his pass breakup on a fourth down. You know, it's just like
the pass breakup fourth down, right? That was just going back to the SEC championship game against Georgia last year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is, you know, we do our offensive breakdown, we do our defensive breakdown, and then we do the Mosley report.
Yes. Because we can't do him in the mini game ball. So you are correct in calling this the Mosley report, because the leadership that he possesses, and Saban talked at length in his press conference about his ability to get them in the right calls at the line of scrimmage against Ole Miss throughout the day. The average fan doesn't see that, and the average fan doesn't know what those calls are. But he is by far the leader of that defense.
Yep. What else? What else on defense?
You know, I think that's it for me, man. It's, you know, I could talk a lot about it because they played their ass off, but I'm ready for mini game balls.
Well, give me your mini game balls on defense.
Mini game ball is going to be A'shaun Robinson. I know you thought I was going to say Eddie Jackson, but we've talked enough about Eddie Jackson. He yep. deserves one as well. But A'shaun Robinson, man, I mean, he didn't make any flashy plays. There was one play where he sat there and broke through the middle and was pressuring the quarterback and forced a throwaway on third down. And you and I saw it. You and I saw the aggression with which he chased him 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
But once again, that was one of our question mark positions going into the season with the loss of Jesse Williams. And I think A'shaun has come in nicely. I enjoyed someone in the press conference talking about how in practice – the coaches are on A'shaun Robinson all the time, apparently, about just do your job. Don't worry about everybody else's job. Just do your job. So maybe that's something that he has worked on. But, dude, the light's coming on as much as it can come on at the nose guard position or the two-gap position. I'm just really excited about where he's going to go the rest of the year.
Yeah, I am too. I think he's, you know, again, another one of those young guys gonna be a star, as big of a star as you can be, you know, in that interior defense. The thing that, you know, when he was chasing down, you know, Bo Wallace, the thing that really stood out to me, and you'll get a nose guard that flushes the, you know, helps flush a quarterback out of the pocket, and then they just kind of jog and they just kind of go through the motions of pursuing the quarterback. A'shaun was heads down sprinting, and he adjusted his, you know, he was like a, you know, 320-pound Terminator, because he was adjusting his pursuit angle to kind of keep up and get after Wallace. And he was literally getting after him, not just, you know, a fat lug, you know, running through the motions there.
Yes. Yes. And that makes, and the quarterback feels that, right?
Yes.
And the quarterback knows he's about to lay the wood on my ass, as opposed to, you know, sometimes you see that play, right, where the quarterback just slowly jogs toward the sideline and still makes a completion.
Yeah, still can make a completion, because the quarterback knows, I've gotten past that guy. He is no longer a threat. He has been Correct. Neutralized because I've gotten a couple steps away from him versus – no, that dude's still coming. He's right. still coming. And so I still need to allocate some thought about this guy's going to truck me if I yes. don't get rid of the ball.
Absolutely. Yeah. Who do you have on defense?
I am going to, and I think, you know, we've kind of already talked about the reasons, but I'm actually going Deion Blue. And for all the love we gave Eddie Jackson, I stand by every syllable of it. But Deion Blue goes in there, and I have to admit, I did not watch him a whole lot because I was watching, I wanted to isolate and watch the freshman and watch Jerick a little bit. And, you know, Deion Blue just went over there, does what he does. They only attempted two passes. You know, we talked about it. He just shut down that half of the field. And at one point I felt guilty. It's like, this dude's performing, I'm not even watching him. You know, he's putting yes. Virtuoso out there, and I'm not even watching him because I want to watch this other guy grow up. And so the fact that he was able to do that, you know, that helps us kind of swing coverages back around, you know, so there's a little more over the top, a little more help, all of those things to kind of help the young guy. Saban even talked about, you know, you can put a young guy out there, you can put an inexperienced guy out there, one of them.
Right.
But getting Deion back makes a big difference, because it enables us to put a young guy out there, because we can rotate, we can cover, and know that the seniors got things taken care of on the other side. So, you know, and then Eddie's going to get all the praise because, oh, look at the freshmen going out there making big plays, and phenomenal. I love it. But it was Deion's performance that really allowed some of that to happen.
Oh, sure, because who are they going to pick on, Deion or Eddie, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other point, too, you know he probably played hurt. He just did a good job of not showing it.
He did, and he's another guy that, you know, if he and Amari want to come sit in the stands with us on Saturday, you know, I'll help carry him up the flight of stairs so they don't, you know, hurt their feet anymore.
Absolutely. Hey, let's jump to special teams. You ready to talk a little Cade Foster?
Yeah, let's talk Cade.
Go ahead, man. Eat some crow, man. Go ahead and apologize.
You know, I don't know. Maybe he responded to my harsh coaching last week. And, you know, I don't want to maybe give him too much praise. But the three field goals, you know, no misses. I'm very, very pleased with that. If we had said, and look, if we say this next week, you know, we're going to line up and attempt three field goals, I don't know that I would predict that he's going to go, you know, 3-0 again, but I think that it was a confidence building opportunity. And so, whereas last week you tell me we're going to kick three, I say, well, we might make one. This week you tell me we're going to kick three, and I say, well, we'll make two of them.
Hey, man, we were very critical of just how he was lining up to the ball and I specifically noticed on the first field goal, for whatever reason, we were on the left hash again. We were lined, you know, right-footed kicker, left hash. He's right on the left goal post again. But instead of, you know, hooking the ball, he put the ball straight through the middle of the uprights.
Yep.
And his last field goal at the end of the first half, okay, it was, as time was running off, it was a 42-yarder.
Yeah.
And we need him to have that moment, because you never know later in the season when at the end of the half or the end of the game, I want him to have done it before.
Yep. And so we can say that now. That is a great point.
So that to me was the biggest takeaway from this game. I wouldn't have cared if he would have missed, well, obviously, him making at least two of the three builds his confidence. But to me, that kick at the end of the half was the most important.
Oh, that's fair, and that makes sense. And we ran him out there without a timeout, and so that was, you know, more of a strained situation. So yeah, hats off to that. I think that was phenomenal. We've talked about in years past where his performance and what looks like his mechanics, that we've brought in a kicking consultant to work with the coaching staff, and certainly to work with, you know, with Cade, and we saw some improvement. You know, I don't know if they made a pit stop in Tuscaloosa this past week, but he seemed more comfortable, more confident, and certainly delivered on Saturday. And I root for the guy to keep it up. I honestly root for the guy to keep it up.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, man, let's talk a little Dylan Lee, man. If he keeps tackling like that on kickoffs, he might find his way to the defense. That was a nice time for him to shine following up his touchdown last week.
Yeah, it sure was. I mean, we're used to seeing 26 Collins down there blowing up the return specialists. But, you know, to see 25 Dylan Lee down there doing that was nice to see. It's good to see different guys, you know, get, you know, more than one person have an opportunity to get down there and blow somebody up. And, you know, that tells me we've got some pretty good coverage units.
Well, I mean, the kickoff returns is getting all the praise because, you know, Landon Collins is in, you know, in the middle of that. But, you know, the combination of Cody with the gunners, Landon being one of them, I think DeAndre White and Landon Collins are really doing a good job. I know we said a little bit about Colorado State, and, you know, if we'd have just known where the ball was, we could have downed the ball on one of those opportunities. Well, Landon Collins made up for it in this game.
I went back and watched the replay five times, and I still think his foot was on the goal line. But hey, ref, sorry you missed it. But he was going down the field looking up for the ball the entire time as he was outrunning the coverage.
Yeah, it makes you think we coached that up this week, huh?
Yes. Yes. So that was just good to see. But all around, you know, Cody, I mean, come on. You got a 46 average on five punts. Your longest is 56 yards and three inside the 20-yard line.
Yeah,
I mean, really? 60% of your punts are inside the 20?
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I want to go back to Cade for a minute. I read a couple articles talking about, you know, and we've lamented his, you know, apparent inability to kick it into the end zone. And so now there was a couple articles out this week talking about, you know, hey, fans, you should be happy he doesn't kick it inside in the field, in the end zone, because they bring it out to the 25. If he does, it's a new rule. It used to be the 20. It's a 25 now. And so instead of getting it at the 25, our coverage units are so good that the team's average drive start is on the 20. And I'm thinking, what kind of knucklehead is writing that article? Because all it takes is, you know, one return and that, and your whole premise blows up. You could have you could have a very good coverage unit, but you're going to give up, you know, one good return a season. And, you know, if only one. And so the whole premise, I think, is knucklehead, put it in the end zone. No one gets hurt. No risk of injury. No risk of a touchdown. And, you know, go 75 yards against our motivated defense.
Every single time. Exactly. Yeah. I'll take those odds any day.
Yeah. Next up, man, we've got Georgia State. And I saw the opening line was 56.5 points. That's a lot.
Well, whoever came up with that line, they must have just gone and looked at the game from 2010.
Yep.
Because the final score was 63-7. It was a 56-point margin.
Yep.
So, boy, that's kind of ironic that the margin is 56.5. No, you know, I don't have a lot prepared to talk about Georgia State. You know, obviously the fun story at the time was Bill Curry and Star Jackson, right? Yeah. I mean, that was the whole thing is what's Star Jackson going to do? And obviously he didn't do diddly. But to me, when I go back and look at the stats from that game, which is really all I can take away, each team had 30 minutes time of possession because we obviously was not trying to run up the score. We had 45 rushes out of 67 play calls. And so the biggest thing that excites me is an A.J. McCarron completed 7 out of 9 in that game when Greg McElroy came out. So guess what? I'm ready to see a true backup. Maybe I'll finally see it. At rushing, Ben Howe had 5 carries for freaking, you know, Nick Tinker had 4 carries. So guess what? We're going to get to see displayed all the running backs. That's exciting. And then we had 10 guys catch the ball in this game. So these are the kind of games you and I live for, because we are going to get to see everybody but the kitchen sink.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, and we talked about it in the preseason. These are the games that you want to get to see the younger guys, because they're the guys that are going to be the players and going to be the stars, you know, of the future. And even the ones we talked about that are already performing, you know, Eddie Jackson's going to get a lot of run, and A'shaun is going to get a lot of run. A lot of these youngsters are. Alton Tenpenny's a running back that we've not talked a whole lot about, but he has the opportunity to really, you know, he's running with a lot of heart now and a lot of passion. And
Derrick Henry's going to get some run.
Derrick Henry's going to get some carry. I think you know, we're going to hopefully we could have tried and didn't, and hopefully we will try to get the ball to O.J. Howard. And so a lot of these youngsters, we're going to see some of these young guys on defense. You know, Jonathan Allen is really picking it up and performing well. You know, Tim Johnson got back into the game. I think we're going to see some more of him. You know, potentially we're going to get to see some Reuben Foster.
I was just about to say that name. How nice would it be to see him for 2 quarters and see what he could do?
You know, we're going to see Ryan Kelly in sort of that, you know, coming off the edge, getting after the quarterback position. You know, Ryan Anderson, I mean. So we're going to start to see, you know, some of these guys in different roles and different capacities. And it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Is it going to be a scrimmage type game? Yeah. But in some respects, that's a celebration of the young guys. And that's a celebration of, you know, the team that we're going to have not only next season, but even later this season, where we're going to need some of these guys to step up. You know, maybe we'll get to see some Chris Black. We'd love to see him haul in a touchdown. So,
yeah, I mean, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I won't call the guy's name out, but while we're talking about Bonehead Media, somebody else put out a piece on AL.com about, you know, Alabama should be embarrassed to be playing this game. Why are they playing this game? Well, you know what? That's because you're shallow. The reason we're playing this game is for the reasons you just mentioned, because we are going to play 70-plus players in this ball game. That's the reason we play at Georgia State.
Well, it's the, you know, and look, and you want me to go on a rant, and so I'll go. It's the boneheaded media, and not all of them, but there's no. it's the boneheaded media that takes this stance. We have to have a playoff. We have to have a playoff. We have to have a playoff. And I'm not in favor of playoff. We have to have a playoff because it gives all the little teams a chance. It gives all the little teams an opportunity because we have to spread the wealth and everybody gets a blue ribbon and everybody gets the opportunity to compete on the same opportunity. So let's have a playoff. All right. So when you get into a playoff and it's a limited number of teams that can go, you know, into it, and we want to represent every region, and so maybe from that standpoint, it makes it a little unfair to a region like the South that's a little more successful. And so you're going to factor into the scheduling equation the strength of schedule. And so when everyone's saying, oh, thank goodness when we do the playoff and we have strength of schedule, we won't see teams play these types of games. And so all of these kind of types of games will go away. Do you know what also goes away when you do that? The little teams.
Yes.
Because when they come to an Alabama or they come to a Miami or they go to a South Carolina or they go to a Florida or they go to an Ohio State or they go to a Texas or they go to USC or they go to these other name band programs and they pick up $1 million check to sustain their athletic budget, when you regulate and you legislate that the big teams, if they do that, that they will be penalized in their strength of schedule. They will no longer pay. And so effectively, they will no longer share their wealth and they will no longer fund these small programs, and all of these small programs will go away.
Yes.
On that one, pick a lane. Do you want everyone to have a fair chance? Or do you want some of these teams to go away? How do you define fair chance? Oh, they have an opportunity to play for a playoff. Do you think Georgia State really has a chance to pay for a playoff? No, they don't. But you know what they do have an opportunity to? Is cash $1 million check and field a football team.
I'm so glad I brought this up. I wish I'd have brought this up at the beginning of the podcast.
Anyways, that's my rant on that. I will say this, to circle back to Alabama. October is the month, and this Ole Miss game was a springboard. October is the month of self-improvement for Alabama football. Georgia State, Kentucky, Arkansas, Tennessee, not a lot, not a lot. Our biggest opponent in the month of October will be ourselves. And if we can go out there and we can handle ourselves in the month of October, we're going to be all right down the home stretch.
Oh, absolutely. This is a pivotal set of games to avoid distraction and focus on getting better and focusing on the little things that he always harps on.
Agreed. Pick a score for Georgia State. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place here at the end. Pick a score on Georgia State.
Man, well, let's see. The bookies have said 56.5, so they must know what the hell they're talking about. You know, I don't see 63. By the way, let me just work in that I respect the hell out of Saban that he ran the ball up the middle at the end of the Ole Miss game when he could have scored another touchdown. That's because you're a classy dude, and I just love that you did that.
Did you notice he had to take LT Penny out of the game because he would have scored?
I just love that. I'm sorry. That's just what makes him who he is. All but right. Going back to the game, I'm going to call 48-7. I don't want to see a score over 50 points.
All right. I've got us 42-3.
Okay.
When you get to numbers that big and a differential that big, it's almost all the same unless you have money on it.
Absolutely. Well, hey, man, I've enjoyed this. I look forward to breaking down some people's never heard of in the next week's show.
Absolutely. That promises to be fun. In the meantime, check us out on secbias.com. We're going to be out there talking about Alabama football, talking about this game, talking about the last game, talking about whatever you want to talk about. Go out there and ring us up with questions, and we'll get there and answer them. I'll want to point to iTunes, subscribe to the show, leave an authentic, honest comment, and that's going to help us in those rankings. We're actually up to number 17 in iTunes when you look up college football, which is pretty darn impressive when you consider all the stuff that's out there. And I want to give a shout out again. I'm not going to do this every week, but we got two new 5-star reviews, Jason in Wichita, Kansas. That's a homer, Zachary Taylor. He actually gives us literally 5-star podcast is what he labels it. There's no way this podcast gets redshirted. I love the football reference there. I want an in-depth, very fair home team analysis. This is a podcast for you, for transplanted fans, or those who can't read the local papers. This podcast is the easy way to get ready for game day. Thanks for all your hard work every week. Man, if this is what passes for hard work, then that's awesome, because this is a lot of fun. And then I don't know what this is, SKS 1969 LA. Great stuff, 5-star. Ton of detail about lineup and substitutions. Detail I have not found anywhere. And Tom, I agree with that, right? Because this is the kind of stuff that we love that we can't find anywhere. These types of opinions.
That's why we're
We pass for analysis. We can't find it anywhere. We read stuff, put together our thoughts, and watch the games, and just love the hell out of talking about it. So we appreciate you listening. We've got, you know what? I'm going to put a challenge out there to our fans. We have 23 ratings in iTunes right now. And if you enjoy the Alabama football podcast, if you enjoy listening to it half as much as we enjoy putting it together, then I'm going to ask that you go out there and give us a rating on iTunes. And what I would like to see before the end of the season is 50 ratings. And look, be authentic. If you don't like us, that's fine.
Tell us what you think.
Tell us what you think. Help us to improve. But I would like to see 50 ratings out there by the end of the season. And so that's kind of the gauntlet that I'm laying down for those that are out there listening. And again, we do appreciate you listening. We'll just kind of include you in the challenge opportunity here. But Tom, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. We enjoy you listening, and roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.